Hi, everybody. This is Pam, and you're listening to the podcast Women Who Stutter, Our Stories, which you can find on the blog Make Room for the Stuttering at www.stutterrockstar.com, and it's also freely available as a download on iTunes. Today, I have the opportunity to speak with another amazing woman who's going to share parts of her story. So I want to say hello to Brianna. Hey, Brianna, how's it going?
Oh, it's going well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Enjoying a nice lazy Sunday here in New York where I live. And we want to know a little bit about you and where you live. So if you could you introduce yourself to us? Tell us who you are and where you're from and a little about yourself.
Okay. My name is Brianna Pipkin, and I was born and raised in Dallas, Texas, and I am now a senior in college at Lamar University, and I am studying to be a speech pathologist.
Terrific. Terrific. And I think I saw on Facebook that you had a birthday recently?
Yes, my birthday was yesterday. I'm 21.
Happy birthday!
Thank you.
How does it feel to be 21? Gosh, that's so old.
It feels really good. I'm excited. Well, I was excited yesterday.
Did you do anything special for your birthday?
Yes, I spent the day with one of my friends, and we just relaxed together, and then yesterday evening, I had a dinner with family and friends.
Oh, nice. Nice. So you mentioned that you're at Lamar University, which is in Beaumont, Texas, and you're studying to become a speech-language pathologist, yep?
Yes.
What drew you into this field?
Well, when I was trying to figure out my major, once I realized I didn't want to do theater or film like I thought I did, I wanted to be a teacher at first, but then I was like, well, I don't really want to, it just seemed like it was going to be so routine, like sitting in the same classroom every day from 8 to 3 or whatever. And then I thought about when I was in speech therapy as a kid and how much I really enjoyed it and how much it has helped now. And I would really like to make that same impact on other kids.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what drew me into it.
So are you in so you said you're a senior, so you're in undergraduate studies now, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And do you have plans to go on for your master's degree?
Yes, I do.
Do you know where?
I'm going to apply to Lamar University, since that's where I am now, and hopefully be able to stay at the same place.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also applying to other schools, such as James Madison University in Virginia.
Oh.
And University of Texas in Dallas.
Is that the one that has the Callier Institute?
Yes.
Ah, I've heard of that. I know a couple people from the National Stuttering Association who also live in Dallas that are a member of that chapter. I hear they have a wonderful communications department.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's what I've heard.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you want to stay in the South.
Yes, I would actually like to move to Virginia to live and work.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't mind staying in Texas either.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that you had a good experience in school in speech therapy as being part of the reason that you decided to go into this field so that you can make an impact and perhaps give back a little. It's interesting that you say that because I've heard from so many people that have had an opposite experience. They didn't have good experiences in speech therapy as a child. Can you tell me a little bit about what it was about your speech therapy that was positive?
Yes. As a small child, I don't remember much of it because I was about 4 years old when I started. But I just remember going into the room because I had a one-on-one session.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember the first speech pathologist I had, you know, she was really nice. And if I did something good, I would get, you know, stickers or a piece of candy. And then later, I think she moved into another line of work. So the speech pathologist I had for the longest time, she actually owned her own practice. And she was a really good friend of the family.
Mm.
So I guess it was like I had a more personal connection
mm-hmm.
with her. And maybe that's why I enjoyed it more.
So this wasn't a school-based therapist that you had. This was a therapist in private practice?
Yes.
Oh.
But I did do school-based therapy in second grade
mm-hmm.
because that was my first year of public school. And my mom just let me do it, you know, just since it was free and it kind of came with the school.
Right.
But I still continued to go to private sessions
mm-hmm.
also.
Now, the private therapist that you saw, she had experience with stuttering?
Yes, she did.
Mm-hmm. And what about the school-based therapist? Did that person, or could you tell a difference?
With the school-based therapist, I don't know if she had had much experience with stuttering, because the other kids in my group in my class, they seem to be more with, need more help with maybe articulation or some other problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think she knew much about stuttering.
Mm. Yeah, that's kind of in line with what I've heard from a lot of people who talk about their, you know, their childhood experiences with therapy, if they've had it as part of the public school system, a lot of people, you know, tend to believe that the school-based therapists just don't have enough experience with mm-hmm. stuttering to really help and make an impact. So what worked with you, with the private therapist? Did she teach you some techniques that you can use?
Yes, she taught me easy onset and I'm trying to remember the other one about pausing.
Okay, yeah.
In between certain words, yes.
Mm-hmm. And do you still practice those techniques now as a young adult?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. And were you involved in speech therapy in high school and college?
No, I stopped doing speech therapy. I think I was maybe 9 or 10 when I stopped completely.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, in college, I recently found out about a sort of speech therapy group for students.
Oh.
And so I just became involved in that in the spring semester and I plan to continue with it when I go back in the fall.
Mm-hmm. So what type of a group is it?
It's for people who stutter. It was three of us in the group, and we basically worked on making phone calls and asking questions when we call,
mm-hmm.
like what are the hours or something.
Right.
And then we also worked on mock interview questions.
Oh, wow, that's great. That's really helpful in college because everybody needs experience with that.
Yes.
So is the group led by a therapist or is it just people who stutter?
It's led by grad students in speech pathology.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And how do you find that? Do you find that they have enough experience to be leading the group?
I think they do. You know, they're also doing their clinicals and stuff
mm-hmm.
at the moment, but I think this is helping them get the experience.
Right, right. Now, as we're chatting now, are you stuttering freely, or are you using your techniques of easy onset and pausing?
I'm pretty much doing a mixture, a
mm-hmm.
mix of stuttering freely, and at some points I will use easy onset or pausing.
Mm. The reason that I ask is that you sound wonderful. You're an excellent communicator, and you really sound very confident as well.
Thank you.
Do you consider yourself to be, like, recovered from stuttering, Brianna?
I wouldn't really say recovered. I mean, I have gotten much better, but I wouldn't completely say recovered because at some points I am still nervous about the way I might sound, especially when I'm, like, in a setting with a lot of people, like in class. And
yeah.
Then I will still stutter, or sometimes I will just, you know, stay quiet if I feel like I'm about to, even though I know I shouldn't do that.
Yeah. How do you handle that in college? And you said you're a senior, so you've had 3 years experience. Do your classmates know that you stutter?
Not many of them. I know my friends. I have two friends who are also speech pathology majors.
Okay.
And so they know that I stutter because we spend extra time together. And maybe a few other people who have heard me stutter, if I was trying to talk to them, they know now.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried disclosing that you stutter in class or like before you have to do a presentation or something like that?
No, I haven't.
Any particular reason why?
I don't know. I guess because I was always afraid that, I know, even if I did disclose it, like, before I have to get up and make a speech or a presentation, that, I don't know, I guess I just didn't have the confidence to do it. And so, even though I should, because I find that when I'm doing presentations, I'm so nervous about, you know, the possibility of stuttering,
mm-hmm.
and nobody knows, so I'll try to rush through my presentations, or I'll just try to summarize something that I could go into more detail about.
Yeah, I definitely know what you're saying, because sometimes, like even you said, like you definitely should disclose because there's no reason why you shouldn't, but that fear of judgment, I think
right.
it's just huge for most people, but particularly for those of us who stutter. Even though people are likely not to judge us, we think they're going to. So, right.
And then, I think the fear of disclosing came from, I tried to disclose it in middle school, in seventh grade, and it didn't go well. So then, after that, I guess I just didn't want to do it anymore.
Mm. What do you mean it didn't go well? Like, on your end, or are you referring to, like, how it was received?
Well, like, when I was in seventh grade, I stuttered, but I would try to use the techniques, like, all the time so people wouldn't hear it.
Mm-hmm.
But I told, you know, my friends and stuff that I did stutter. And so one day my teacher, we were in English class, and she asked me to read something. And so as I was reading it, I started to stutter. And then, like, the people who knew I stuttered, they still started laughing anyway. And then the whole class laughed, and the teacher laughed, too.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and, oh, my gosh, I was just so sad.
What did you do after that? Do you remember that? Like, did you go home and tell your family that happened?
Oh, yeah. I went home, and I cried to my mom once she picked me up from school. And actually, I think that happened. I think that was my last class of the day anyway. So right after that, it was time to go home. And so I went home and told my mom, and she talked to the teacher the very next day before school started.
Mm-hmm.
And so the teacher didn't know that I stuttered, so she felt bad for laughing. She said she thought that I was just playing or, like, trying to be silly or something.
Mm.
But I don't know. I'm not a person that jokes around like that.
Right.
That much. So.
So, did the teacher apologize?
Mm-hmm. She apologized.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good, at least, because of all things, we certainly we don't need teachers showing that kind of insensitivity, whether, you know, she realized it or not.
Right.
Because stuttering is so often misunderstood by so many people, and part of it is brought on by ourselves. You know, I was covert myself for many years, or thought I was. I mean, I tried to hide my stuttering, but was not always very good at it. But I thought just by not talking about stuttering meant that nobody knew that I stuttered, which was not always the case. But the misunderstandings often came because I was too embarrassed to you know, let people know what was going on, or that I wasn't trying to be funny, or I wasn't nervous, or I wasn't dumb. You know, it was just the way that I talk. So I think sometimes we bring some misunderstandings on ourselves by not raising awareness. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I completely agree with what you just said. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I never thought about it that way, but you're right.
Yeah. I've had conversations with people where we've discussed that it's kind of like almost our responsibility to let people know that we stutter so that they can prepare, you know, because if you just, if somebody doesn't know you and doesn't know that you stutter, and they encounter you and stuttering for the first time, many people's initial reaction is to laugh. And, you know, if they don't know any better because we've not told them, then, you know, this is a discussion that I've had with other people, then what can we expect if we're not, you know, educating them? And, you know, like you, I guess I kind of hadn't thought about that myself, until me and some other people that stutter kind of, you know, began discussing that. So I kind of agree with that. I think in some regards, it's my responsibility to let people know, you know, that I do stutter and what stuttering is, so they don't laugh at me or so they don't make fun of me.
Right.
Have you had that happen as you became older? Have you ever had anybody, you know, laugh or tease or mock you in the high school and the college years?
Not in high school, and I disclosed it in high school because I was in a play. I went to an arts magnet school here.
Oh, cool.
And so I was in a play, and there was some line I had to say where the sentence started with the letter I, and so I have trouble with that at the very beginning of a sentence, so I had to tell my teacher, who was also the director, you know, I stutter, so I would have to, you know, have time to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
And she said it was okay. So, but not many people in high school knew that I stuttered either.
Mm-hmm. You know, it almost sounds like you've been a covert stutterer.
Mm-hmm. I have.
Yeah. you're familiar with that term, right?
Yes.
Yeah, because it almost seems like that's what you're describing. Not many people know you stutter. You don't disclose it very often. I mean, that's almost like the hallmark of covert behavior. We just don't want people to know we stutter for a variety of reasons, including that fear of judgment.
Right.
How do you think you'll handle that once you get into grad school? Do you think that you'll be more open about it or that you'll have to be more open?
I'm actually trying to make myself become more open now because I realize, you know, what you were just talking about, you know, it's kind of our responsibility to let people know, you know, ahead of time. And then also, you know, if we were more open to talk about it and explaining it to people, then it wouldn't become such a, it wouldn't stay such a unknown
right
thing, I guess. So I have been trying to make myself become more open about it. And I think the stuttering therapy group that I mentioned I was in college.
Yeah.
I think that has helped me, learn that it is okay to be more open.
Mm-hmm.
About it. So I said I was going to try to become more open now.
Well, you're making a big step right now by being on a podcast where you're identifying yourself as a person, as a woman who stutters. You know, what's this like?
To be on the podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm really enjoying it. And I actually listened to a lot of your other podcast, and I really enjoy those two, the mm-hmm. ones that I have listened to.
Mm-hmm. Have you learned stuff from listening to other women who stutter when they've shared their stories?
Yes.
Like
I've
what?
Learned, mm-hmm. I've learned a lot. I think it one that stood out that you did, I think it was another lady who stuttered, and she was becoming a speech pathologist.
Mm-hmm.
I think she was maybe in the master's program already, but I don't want to get it wrong.
Right.
But that really helped because I did sort of wonder, you know, how would I be seen as a speech pathologist to stutters? Like, would people think it was okay or not? Because I had never seen, well, I don't know many speech pathologists, but I had never heard of one who stuttered or had a speech impediment themselves.
Yeah, you know, that's a really interesting point because just this past year at the National Stuttering Association's annual conference, which I don't believe you attended, right?
No.
Have you ever attended any of the NSA conferences?
No, I haven't, but I have made plans to try to attend next year.
Awesome, because you're not too far from Arizona.
Right.
Yeah. It's a wonderful experience, and it really just opens your eyes to lots of insights and valuable lessons in the stuttering community. But at this most recent conference, they had a very interesting workshop, and it was titled Person Who Stutters by Chance, Speech-Language Pathologist by Choice. And it was talking about the emerging trend that there are more and more people who stutter choosing to become SLPs. So you'll see when you go to the conference next year that there are increasing numbers of people who stutter choosing to become SLPs because, like you, they feel like they want to contribute and give back because they were helped. So I think that you'll find just by, you know, meeting people who stutter that are going into the same field that, yes, they can do it.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting.
Mm-hmm. But then
I wish I would have been there.
Yeah, yeah. I'm hoping that they'll repeat it, actually, because it was the first time that they ever did that workshop. But then you also have the whole other perspective, and you touched on it briefly, and I'm going to shut up in a minute and give you a chance to expound on it. But then there's the whole other perspective of, you know, wondering, can a person who stutters, you know, very, very noticeably and openly, can that person really help a person who stutters to, you know, develop fluency? And I think there's some people who think that that's kind of like, you know, like a dilemma, like the pot calling the kettle black. Like, can that really be done? You know, and I think that you kind of like alluded to that, like you weren't sure if that was possible. So based on hearing that there are, you know, a lot of people who stutter that do go on to become SLPs, what do you think?
I think it would be possible, and I actually think that SLPs who do stutter, they may be able to make a, I guess maybe a greater impact because, for one, they have the personal experience of stuttering. So they know, you know, how it feels, especially when they're helping a kid who stutters. So they may be able to connect in a way that an SLP who doesn't stutter, they wouldn't be able to do that. And then I think they would probably also be able to help the child or the person know that it's okay to stutter and you don't have to search for a cure or be 100% fluent to go on and do successful things.
Yeah. So since you mentioned that, do you think that it's okay to stutter?
I do, yes.
You didn't sound too convincing.
Yeah, I do. It's just, I mean, you know, of course there are times where, I don't know if you, but I know I wish, I'm like, man, it would be so cool to, or it probably would be amazing to be just 100% fluent all the time. But being, I mean, you know, it's not possible, but you just have to think about, you know, the progress that you have made and just continue to feel confident.
Right.
About it.
So I you and I have communicated back and forth in one of the face group stuttering forums. What do you think of that? The rise of the online stuttering groups and the very varied perspectives there. What do you get out of being a member?
I enjoy being a member because, for one, I had never seen so many other people who stuttered before, because I didn't. There was one girl I knew who stuttered growing up, and then the two people I know in the group at college. So that's only three people in person that I know who stutter. But then to go on the Facebook stuttering group and see, you know, all these people from all over who stutter, I thought that was pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of some of the controversial thoughts and perspectives that come up in some of the conversations?
they're interesting, especially, you know, the Anna Dieter one that has been going on. It's just, I don't know, it just boggles my mind about how some people can be, you know, so persistent. It's not like a one-time post.
Right.
But it's like, you know, the same people constantly coming back and saying the same old thing. You know, there's a cure in like 3 days or a week.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you just know that it just can't happen. At least not now. Maybe one day, but.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, but it's amazing that there are people that are still looking for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, still looking for that quick fix. And, you know, even though those people that are out there that persist in, you know, kind of scamming, you know, and mm-hmm. just not letting it go, there are people that are looking for that quick fix because they're so desperate, and it almost seems
right.
like they're willing to pay anything, you know?
Right.
It's kind of
yeah.
sad.
It is, and I think the issue with, you know, people always trying to find the quick fix is, I think if you're always going around looking for it, it's harder to come to terms and acceptance with it if you're always looking for the next best thing.
Yeah. Wow, that was really well said.
Thank you.
How did you come to terms with your own acceptance of being a person who stutters, or have you?
Yes, I finally come to terms with it actually pretty recently, I think, once I got into the group. And just seeing how, you know, it was okay, and learning more about my own stuttering, because I actually didn't know before that there wasn't a cure for stuttering. I just thought, you know, I still stuttered because I hadn't found the cure yet. But then once I learned that, and then I realized, well, you know, you did speech therapy for, you know, 5 or 6 years with a very, very well-recognized or a very good speech pathologist.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is as good as it's going to get, but it's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, there's definitely disabilities out there that are certainly far more challenging than stuttering is. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
You mentioned that you had been in a play in high school. Was that just a high school thing, or are you continuedly interested in theater acting? Because you mentioned also that in the beginning of our conversation that you had briefly considered, like, maybe studying acting in film?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I actually started doing theater, acting in plays in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And then it continued into high school because I was in the arts magnet school. And I wasn't a huge fan of theater. I mean, it was fun, but I was more interested in doing film. And so I thought I was going to pursue film, so I took all these film classes and did headshots and everything, and I still did nothing with them. They're still in my closet.
Oh.
but that is what I wanted to do throughout middle school and high school, and even the beginning of college. My major at first was theater and playwriting, my first year of college.
So what made you change?
Because I changed the playwriting because I realized that it was something I enjoyed doing, like as a hobby or to myself, but it's not something I wanted to try to make a career out of.
Mm.
And then the same thing with the acting, because there are a few opportunities in Dallas for acting, but not much. I would pretty much have to go to, California to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I was more interested in pursuing with school.
Yeah. Now, your speech wasn't part of that decision to switch, was it?
It was a small part of the reason that I wanted to switch from theater to film, because when I was doing the film classes, when they film you, you do get to start over if you make mistakes.
Okay.
Whereas on stage, you can't. But also, I think I felt that film was just more fun overall than stage. So it had a very small part, but not a huge part in wanting to switch.
That's good to hear, because I feel saddened when I hear that somebody's let their speech, interfere with them following their dreams or a career path that they really want it to do.
Mm-hmm.
So what other types of things do you enjoy doing? What types of things do you do for fun?
For fun, I love watching movies, whether it's, my million DVDs or going to the movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
I could watch movies all day, and I love reading.
Cool. What's your favorite movie?
Oh, geez, I have so many. I guess one of my top favorite movies would be Gone with the Wind.
Oh, an oldie but goodie, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I love old movies.
Mm-hmm. So, what would you say, and thank you for sharing that off-the-cuff, non-stuttering, related piece. it's always nice to just find out what people are interested in besides stuttering.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say stuttering has taught you?
It's taught me, I think it's actually taught me to be more accepting of differences in people. I don't know if anybody else would feel the same way, but that's one thing I've gotten out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely heard some people comment that they feel not only more accepting, but that stuttering kind of like makes us more compassionate towards others.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's true of yourself?
Yes, I think that's true, especially growing up, because, since I was picked on, I couldn't see myself doing it to anybody else and felt bad when it happened.
Yeah.
Other people.
Well, this has been such a delight, Brianna. I'm so glad we had this opportunity to chat in real time instead of just Facebook messaging back and forth. It's always neat to be able to just hear somebody's voice, and I've enjoyed you sharing parts of your story with us. Thanks for agreeing to be a guest.
No problem, and thank thank you for asking me.
It's been
really
a pleasure. Yeah, it's been a real pleasure, and I'm glad you enjoyed it, too. It's been fun.
Yes, it has.
And this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.